Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're reaching out to the commissioner from Connecticut's Department of Energy and Environmental Protection for an update on the agency's 20 by 26 initiative. Then we'll meet a representative from the Yukon Extension whose aim is to support and grow Connecticut's livestock industry. And we'll find out how well state residents did tapping the recent Get Your Refund CT program at United Way. We'll get right into it after this timely reminder. The after effects of the deadly wildfires in and around Los Angeles are going to be felt for some time to come. So if you're inclined to offer assistance in the form of financial support, the Better Business Bureau Wise Giving Alliance is offering a few tips to give thoughtfully. First, make sure the charity is trustworthy. Before giving, search the charity's report on give.org to find out if they meet the BBB standards for charity accountability. Be wary of relief appeals that have vague program descriptions and don't explain what activities your support is going to assist. Watch out for clickbait and phishing scams. Online giving scams tend to pop up after a disaster to take advantage of public sympathy. So instead of clicking on links popping up on web or social sites, go directly to a charity's website on your own and verify charity registration. Connecticut and California are two of the 40 states that require charities to register. And if you'd like more guidance on helping Los Angeles area wildfire victims or supporting other disaster assistance, visit the BBB Wise Giving Alliance at give.org. As I am fond of telling every environmental commissioner here in Connecticut, my very first For the People, these almost 33 years ago, featured the commissioner then of the Connecticut DEP. I'm so pleased we're going to continue that tradition with Katie Dykes, our current commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. In February of last year, DEEP launched the 20 by 26 initiative, setting 16 performance targets to achieve by the end of 2026 and asking for four additional goals from stakeholders that are going to improve the transparency, predictability, and efficiency of DEEP programs. We're going to talk all about that and a few other really cool things. Commissioner Dykes, thanks. Welcome to the program.
John, thanks so much for having me.
here we are, winter season. The people who know what crown jewels Connecticut's DEEP and other parks are to them 12 months a year, they can kind of turn off the radio and go get a cup of coffee. Let's bring a bunch of other people out to Connecticut state facilities. There's a lot to do at Connecticut parks, including a big winter festival coming up.
There is one of my favorite events that we get to host every year together with the city of Torrington is our winter festival. It's held this year. It'll be February 1st, and it's at Burr Pond State Park up there in Torrington from 10 to 3. One of the best kept secrets of DEEP is our No Child Left Inside program, where we have talented and passionate DEEP staff who work with volunteers and others in the community to provide really fun activities for kids and families to get outdoors. So you can just show up with your hat and mittens on, go out on the ice and enjoy some ice fishing. We'll have gear already set up, so you can experience that if you've never tried it before. We'll have lots of other fun activities going on where you can learn to do marshmallow roasting and see ice sculptures and search and rescue dogs and a whole lot of other demonstrations. We have amazing community partners who help us put this event on every year. And it's just a great way to showcase that Connecticut has wonderful outdoor recreation opportunities available every season of the year. So just because it's chilly outside doesn't mean you can't go out and get some sunshine and enjoy some fun. And so we hope we'll be able to see a lot of people come and join us at the Winter Festival.
Yeah, looking forward at the forecast, at least as we are recording this on Friday and broadcasting it on January 12th. It still looks like we're going to be mostly seeing brown grass and surface and not a lot of snow. Plenty of time to go out to one of Connecticut's great parks for a walk or a hike, or maybe even do some fishing elsewhere as well. That brings me to the subject of ice. We're going to talk about two elements of ice. The first is being safe if you're out on it, whether you're ice fishing, ice skating, or just kind of exploring that different slippery kind of fun surface.
Yeah, it's, you know, this is obviously with climate change, you know, our winters are changing. But we still are experiencing some of that cold weather that that brings us the traditional, you know, New England frozen pond opportunities to get out and do some fishing or skating or enjoy time on the ice. So it's really important for folks to know how, you know, about ice safety. You generally, I mean, we've had a steady period of cold weather here recently, so that means the possibilities for getting out on the ice are a little better than they were a few weeks ago. You know, you need a minimum of 4 inches of new clear ice before a person should attempt standing on it. And, you know, ice is never 100% safe. There's a lot of factors that go into the strength of ice. You can't really tell the strength just by its appearance, you know. So we encourage anyone who's considering getting on the ice this winter to be careful and check out some of our ice safety tips that are up on DEEP's website. That's portal.ct.gov/deep and search ice safety, and you can learn a whole bunch about, you know, ice thickness and how it freezes and when it, what are some guidelines for when it can be safe to get out on the ice.
The DEEP website also features a raft of information for individuals who want to try to take the best care of Connecticut's environment and be mindful of that, even though they have to deal with the kind of ice that may crop up on their stairs, walkways, driveways, and roadways. I know that you recently just put out a message asking folks to be extra mindful about both the quantity and type of chemicals that they're using for ice melting.
You bet. So this is a core part of DEEP's mission is education. We know, and so we're excited to bring resources and information to the public to help people understand the best ways that they can, you know, address safety issues like ice and snow removal, but in a way that minimizes impacts to the environment. You know, elevated salt concentrations do have an impact. They can strip essential nutrients from the soil that are necessary for plant growth. They can impact, you know, organisms that live in our freshwater streams, and they can even impact drinking water at elevated levels. And, you know, that's an issue. We have a lot of residents in our state who rely on wells, private wells for drinking water. Mm-hmm. So that's why we took some extra steps to put up more information on our website recently about best practices for salt application, whether it's on roadways or sidewalks or parking lots, to help balance public safety with protecting the environment. There's those FAQs are again located on our DEEP website. You just search road salt FAQs, and that will take you to this new page that we hope lots of folks will get some benefit from.
Very good. Well, as we mentioned earlier in the introduction, the 20 by 26 initiative builds on DEEP's previously and highly successful 20 by 20 initiative, which you talked about on this program over these few years back. Recently, the first update on the 20 by 26 initiative has been released. So roll us back to that to that transition between 20 by 20 and 20 by 26, and tell us how the earlier was able to, you know, sort of fortify and give great direction and inform the 20 by 26 program.
Sure thing. Well, you know, there's a lot of talk lately, enthusiasm about permitting reform, how to make, cut down on red tape and eliminate, these government decision-making processes that can contribute to slowing down, projects and infrastructure development and so on. And I like to say that we've been working on permitting reform at DEEP before it was cool. Back in 2019, when I started as the DEEP commissioner, this is one of the first things that I launched was this effort across our whole agency to make our processes work better. And you might say, why would the environment commissioner be the one, really pushing for this reform? And that's because as someone who cares deeply about sustainability and environmental protection, when our processes don't work efficiently, they're not they may be holding back economic growth and good projects from moving forward, and that also can mean that they're not effectively addressing pollution and achieving our environmental conservation and protection objectives. One great example of that is the Transfer Act. This is the top priority goal of our current initiative around process improvement. We want to replace this very outdated law that has been governing the cleanup of contamination on properties around Connecticut. It's really outdated. It's not working to motivate property owners to clean up their sites, and that means a lot of communities, especially some of our cities, are burdened with abandoned factories and brownfields that are just sitting there with a lot of pollution. These are sites that could host, new job creating investments and return the vibrancy of our urban centers. And so we are working hard. Goal number one of our 20 goals that we're working to achieve by 2026 is to replace the Transfer Act with a new regulation that modernizes our cleanup framework to bring it in line with what 48 other states are doing that works more effectively with property owners to help motivate them to clean up their properties and do so in a more comprehensive way. And so I'm excited that we're on track with that goal. We're planning to deliver that regulation to the legislature in just a few weeks, and hopefully that will mean by the time we hit June of this year, we will be able to say that we've achieved our first goal and we're on track to sunset that outdated program and replace it with something that will be better for economic growth and for the environment. But that's just one of, many goals that we have set. I'm particularly proud of. I think that's had an impact way beyond what we anticipated, was the goal to establish a concierge service that the public and permit applicants and stakeholders would be able to take advantage of as a sort of a someone who can be, our concierge is intended to be a front door, a friendly front door, where anyone who has an application for a permit pending with DEEP can get information through the concierge on what's the status of the permit. They can help to facilitate if there's any issues that are coming up that are slowing down reviews. And our concierge also is a great place to start if you think you might need a permit from DEEP, because they help you navigate the different offices within DEEP that may have permitting requirements that apply to your project. Okay. So this has been really one of the easiest things that we've set up as part of this initiative. We dedicated a few staff to serve in this function. You can just email deep.concierge@ct.gov. And let them know about a project that you have or a permit that you're waiting on to be able to take advantage of this service. It's just been really transformative.
Mm. One of the things we've been talking about here on For the People with the Valley Council of Governments is the Kinneytown Dam Project and dam safety permits, and dam safety in and of itself has been something that's been weighing on the mind of both you and your colleagues at the DEEP. We have seen some potential for issues with dam safety here in Connecticut. Tell us about that goal 18 of the 20 by 26 initiative?
Well, great question. It's been about a year now since we were responding to damage to a privately owned dam, the Fitchville Dam in Basra, that required the evacuation of about 500 people from that community. So that really inspired us to put modernizing dam safety regulations as one of our process improvement goals. Connecticut has the highest number of dams per river miles in the country. We have over 4,800 dams in our state, so that really sets us apart. And many of those dams are privately owned, and they may, you know, serve an important role for water supply, recreation, energy production, and so on. But some dams no longer serve the purpose for which they were designed, and the owners of those dams may be actively seeking to remove them. We wanted to streamline the process for dam owners that want to pursue removal to make it easier for them to do so. And we're doing that as part of this goal by expanding the eligibility to use a certain kind of general permit, a dam safety general permit, to make it easier to navigate that process.
Great. Taking it one step further down the goal tote board to number 19 actually is pretty exciting for folks to know, because it's putting DEEP right into their own neighborhoods, in a manner of speaking.
Absolutely. And in fact, this is really timely because we're achieving a milestone with that goal. This is a goal to establish community resource hubs. This would be a physical location in communities, particularly environmental justice and distressed communities, where residents who are disproportionately impacted by environmental pollution because of where they live can come to a physical location and get ready access to information about the different programs and benefits, rebates, and services that DEEP offers. Too often, because of a lack of money or time or transportation resources or access to information, residents may not be aware of the enormous variety of programs that DEEP offers. Everything from rebates and incentives to help make your utility bills more affordable, or getting access to workforce opportunities, such as coming to work in one of our state parks. So we want to close that gap and help more communities learn what DEEP has to offer by having a physical presence in communities through these community resource hubs. So we're launching a request for qualifications from nonprofits and others who can provide that kind of an interface, that kind of a hub service. And we think this will help us better connect residents with the programs that that DEEP is privileged to implement. So I'm really excited about that goal moving forward.
Yeah. And in the last few minutes that we have with you, Commissioner Dykes, let's wind it all the way back to goal four, because no effort to help make Connecticut's and our Northeast and global environment improved can come without the enforcement of environmental regulations. And that goal in the 20 by 26 initiative to strengthen enforcement resources has also got to be something that you're really, really fired up about.
That's right. So our goal at DEEP is, of course, compliance. You know, we are charged with implementing different limits on pollution by the legislature, and we do everything that we can to help through our permitting process work with entities that are subject to these kinds of pollution limits to make sure that they know how to stay in compliance. But unfortunately, we do have those situations where a permitted entity is not in compliance, and that's where we have to take enforcement action. And it's really important that communities have transparent information to know where are those there are those situations of noncompliance. And so that's something that we're doing to ensure that we can update our enforcement response policy, publish a list of significant industrial users who are out of compliance for wastewater discharges, which is one we hear about frequently from communities, and initiate enforcement mapping efforts for transparency. So our goal is to, again, not just do our job in terms of enforcement, but also to make sure that the public, you know, folks living particularly in proximity to these facilities are aware of the compliance track record for, you know, entities nearby.
Great.
It's part of our overall goal, of course. We want to make our permitting process more efficient. We have over 125 different types of permits, the deep issues. We've set time frames so that applicants know, you know, have a sense of how long it'll take to get a permit. We've cut through our backlog of permit applications that were older than 3 years that were sitting, you know, at DEEP. We cut that by 65%. We're doing extraordinary work to make the permitting process more effective. We're providing more resources for entities with permits so that they can stay in compliance. But unfortunately, in those situations where folks exceed their permit limits, we are taking that very seriously and now doing even more to involve the public.
Very good. And in the last minute that we have with you, when folks are traveling around the country and going to state and national parks, they're seeing a lot of branding above and beyond that of the state or park that they're in. And I know you and I in previous conversations have talked about the introduction of various partnerships with private entities in state parks. Are folks in Connecticut going to start seeing more of these public-private partnerships when they go to Connecticut DEP facilities?
Yes. So we have launched a new Office of Outdoor Experiences, and we are eager to partner more with small business owners and service providers to expand on the kinds of recreation opportunities that people can enjoy when they come to a state park. So we launched an RFP last year. We got some great responses. We were able to work with concessionaires who are offering, for example, canoe rentals at some of our popular lakes at our state parks, for example. I'm hopeful in the future we'll be able to find some partners who might want to offer some glamping opportunities at some of our campgrounds, or even look at refurbishing some of the beautiful historic facilities that we have to offer even more services around food service or wedding hosting and those types of things. But it builds on a strong foundation of wonderful state parks that we're able to steward on behalf of the people of Connecticut. We have some beautiful resources from the mountains to the coast. And we recently refurbished our website. So ctparks.com, if you haven't visited a state park lately, check it out. Our new website helps you find a park and with that will be best for your interests and activities that you're seeking out. So we're thrilled about that.
Connecticut DEP Commissioner Katie Dykes, continuing the tradition of being a great partner here to the award-winning For the People, helping us unpack just a few of the 20 by 26 goals that our Connecticut General Assembly will be looking at in just a few weeks. Commissioner Dykes, thank you once again for all your time this morning, and we hope to see you soon. Thank you. Well, as we said in our introduction, we're going to be talking with Mackenzie White. She joined the Yukon Extension as their diversified livestock field-based extension specialist back last November. Mackenzie's comes from a farming family herself up in Maine, and we're really pleased. I guess, Mackenzie, when you think about livestock on farms, the thoughts turn to the huge herds and cattle drives and things like that. But in fact, many Connecticut farms that are dealing with livestock are doing so with a relatively small population of animals. We're going to talk a lot about what the work you're doing, but first we want to remind people about some other animals here in Connecticut. There's always something wild happening at the Beardsley Zoo, even during these chilly days of winter. Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo continues to set and achieve new goals in conservation, education, research, and guest experience. And while it might be cold outside, you can warm up with a visit to their tropical paradise in their Victorian greenhouse. As you stroll through, you can see several plant species flowering and feed their colorful koi fish in their pond. It's a short walk through another world, and it's free with zoo admission, where you'll see the winter activities of a lot of other animals. You can find out more by planning a winter visit and special winter hours by visiting BeardsleyZoo.org, and we hope you'll do that. So Mackenzie did warn me ahead of the interview that she was on the downside, I hope, Mackenzie, of this stupid cold that's going around these days. So
sorry about that. I did pause.
That's okay. Oh yeah, no, that's okay. If you have to take a moment to clear your throat or whatever, that's fine. So as we mentioned, you grew up in a farming family, so this UConn Extension position was quite a natural extension, if you will, of something you've been involved with virtually all your life.
Yeah, no, great. Thanks for the introduction. Yeah, no, I grew up on a small family farm in southern Maine where we kind of had multiple different species of livestock. And really, that's kind of where my passion and interest all sparked from and basically kind of led me down here to Connecticut. And like you said, after college and my different experiences, it definitely was just a very natural fit for me to just kind of play into this role. So I'm super excited to be working with UConn Extension and even more excited to be working with our diverse audience of farmers across the state, getting out there and helping them and providing them with the education and outreach that they need.
So really, I mean, if you want to boil it down, the family that ends up keeping a couple of or a few chickens in a small coop in the yard to get fresh eggs, all the way up to some of Connecticut's largest livestock farms, they're all within your purview in some way.
Exactly. Yeah. So basically, it's anybody just starting from even just considering adding livestock to their operation or considering getting a flock to, like you said, like a very large livestock farm or multi-generational family farm, anywhere within that range. So there's a lot of folks that I can work with.
Now, our obviously the this bird flu issue has been something that has been of a concern here in Connecticut ahead of your arrival at the extension, especially out in eastern Connecticut. Is this something that you and your team are watching carefully?
Yeah, we definitely are watching it carefully and definitely working with our state vet here in Connecticut to kind of stay ahead of it and, you know, make sure our biosecurity is, you know, up to par and just, you know, making sure that our farmers are aware of it and, you know, adjusting their practices as necessary to make sure that their flocks are safe and their farms are safe, of course. So it's definitely on our radar, and definitely we kind of just come into play with making sure that people are provided with the education and resources about the flu, bird flu, and like what they can do and how they can be prepared if, knock on wood, it ever does come to Connecticut. So
as you're working with the UConn Extension now just a few months, what are a couple of the projects you've already been able to dig into?
So as like you said, I've only been here a couple months, but some of the different projects, the biggest goal right now I have is doing a needs assessment with livestock producers. So part of this needs assessment is just more or less
getting out and about and introducing myself to farmers all across the state in all the 8 counties, and just more or less, like I said, introducing myself, getting to know them, getting to know their operations, better understanding their goals, maybe their challenges or their needs or possibly aspirations of their farm, and to better understand who's out there and what my audience is and see what's going on. And it's, you know, it's great to hear these different conversations. You know, they're really high quality conversations, and I'm hoping from this needs assessment it really helps me prioritize and really figure out the focus of the program as it's established.
Yeah, in full disclosure, I got to know Mackenzie by attending one of these listening sessions myself in Western Connecticut recently, and got to hear a little bit of what she is hearing on a much larger scale from some of the farmers that were there at the time. Some very interesting input. Mackenzie, as you're moving around the state, are you getting a feeling that depending on where you are in Connecticut, these livestock farmers tend to be more clustered, like there's more cows or dairy business in one particular area versus something like sheep or goats in another? Or is Connecticut a pretty diverse patchwork of livestock farmers?
Yeah, so like as like a lot of people can suspect, like, you know, our larger kind of ag heavy counties would be more or less like our Litchfield County and our Windham County, you know, they're heavy with dairy farms. But, you know, it's definitely well spread throughout. I mean, you're going to find these smaller operations with backyard flocks, or you're going to see the different farms with small ruminants. You're going to see them with goats and sheep. So we are well spread out in the sense of just general livestock. But, I mean, you will see heavier, I guess you could say heavier ag counties for sure. But luckily, we're pretty diverse and pretty spread out, though.
Just as we talk about some of these boutique farms for fruits, vegetables, plants, and landscape flora, so goes Connecticut's livestock farms, as we mentioned earlier. Some of these farmers in some cases, are even part-time. They have full-time jobs, and then they come home nights and weekends, and they have, you know, a half a dozen sheep, a half dozen goats, a couple of cows. How much of a split do you see between these small boutique livestock operations and some of the larger, maybe multi-generational and commercialized type of operations?
Yeah, so it's hard to, like, put an actual number on it, per se, because I happen to be one of those farmers that, you know, does the 40 hours a week at a job and then goes home to their, you know, small farm of, you know, 20 beef cows and a small flock of sheep, that sort of thing. So, but that's, like, the most common thing that you're going to see here in Connecticut is that more often than not, a lot of these folks, or whether it's themselves or maybe their partner or spouse, significant other, has an off-the-farm full-time job, another source of income to the farm. So that's really common practice here in Connecticut. So that's probably going to be like a huge portion of my audience, but I mean, nothing to take away from these farmers that are doing it full time. It's just not as common here in Connecticut as it is to see them having an actual full time job and then doing the farming part time.
Well, as you know, Connecticut is the land of steady habits, and I guess a lot of farmers really are steeped in tradition, many multi-generational operations here in Connecticut. But I have to imagine that a lot of farmers, while they are holding dear to longtime agricultural traditions, are also taking great advantage of state-of-the-art science and technology to help both improve their bottom line and, you know, take better care of the animals or products that they are raising and purveying to consumers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And luckily for that, like with some of these multi-generational farms, there is like a younger generation that's more apt to do this. You know, farmers you know, some of these older generations get stuck in their ways, but luckily the newer generations are not necessarily just the newer generations or younger generations, but they're all starting to see kind of the big picture of trying to make these changes and adaptions that they need to make in order to mitigate any issues that are coming about, like speaking of climate change or, you know, increasing costs of, you know, production and operation. Of course, I'm not sure where I'm going with this answer, but they're just like, they're more or less taking advantage of what's out there in order, because they're realizing more or less that they kind of have to, because, you know, something's got to give, something's got to change. I need to make some sort of change on my farm in order to, you know, make it profitable or worthwhile to actually be doing this at the end of the day.
Yeah. And diversifying maybe what is being offered to consumers as well. We've talked to a number of other agricultural professionals about that in the past. But circling back to your expertise in the last 4 or 5 minutes that we have with you, let's talk about somebody who may have been thinking about getting a few chickens or a couple sheep or some goats or rabbits or what have you, farmers that may want to pivot into livestock either in a big way or to diversify what they're already doing.
Right.
This is where you and your office really shines.
Yeah, no, definitely. So when anybody is like considering livestock or thinking about getting a flock, you know, we always encourage them to reach out to a certain service, whether it's like somebody like ourselves, like Extension, or somebody within the college or 4-H, just because, you know, we would hate for somebody to get started off on the wrong foot or the wrong path, because there's a lot of things you need to consider, you know, when getting livestock. It's not just a matter of, you know, let's set up a pen and get a coop, get a bag of grain and start. There's a lot of things that, you know, we want to make sure they're aware of, more or less for the welfare and safeness of the animals and that sort of thing. So, like, we encourage folks to reach out to us all the time. We're here to help. We're here to provide that service to them whenever needed, just so they can, like I said, get started off on the right foot and down the right path, you know, because we want them to kind of enjoy the process and understand the process. And
so if somebody's listening to this program this morning and they're like, maybe I want to reach out to the Yukon Extension and see about getting some fresh eggs or something like that, you really can provide, you know, kind of the roadmap, the recipe, the materials, the ingredients, everything for a startup,
exactly,
but also a pipeline established operations toward the newest or best resources as far as Yukon Extension is concerned.
Right, exactly. So no matter where they are in their plan or process, like, we're here to help. Whether, like you said, whether they're just looking for someplace local to buy food or whether they're actually like thinking of raising their own food, we're here to help with any stage of that process.
And as we close the conversation, Mackenzie, just give folks a little bit of an idea of the diversity. It's not just cows and chickens. You know, I did mention goats and rabbits, but I mean, there's alpacas and llamas. There's a massive variety of different ways that people can acquire and begin to raise and possibly profit from livestock here.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, there's, like you said, there's multiple different species, but there's multiple different breeds of those species as well. So it's basically finding what works for you and what, like, works for your goals of your farm. Yeah, it's figuring it all out. And really, like, my biggest takeaway from it all is just to do your research and figure out exactly what you want to do and kind of collect all that information before you start. And that's kind of where we come into it all.
Very good. Well, we very much appreciate your conversation with us here this morning. Mackenzie White is the new Diversified Livestock Extension Field-Based Specialist with the Yukon Extension. If you'd like to learn more, you can go to livestock.extension.yukon.edu and learn more about what Mackenzie and her colleagues and office can do for you. If you're interested in maybe beginning a farm, pivoting from a different type of output product into livestock or adding livestock and perhaps getting an idea of the various ways that that livestock can be utilized to diversify your consumer offerings. It's all for you there with Mackenzie White and her team at the Yukon Extension. Mackenzie, I hope you're feeling better. Thank you so much for the time this morning, and we can't wait to run into you again somewhere across one of Connecticut's farms or livestock operations. Thanks so much, John. Take care. Bye. Well, we're always pleased to hear when something that we talk about when we read PSA messages here on the award-winning For the People end up getting through to the very people we hope to target with them. And then they go the next extra step and take action. Well, Connecticut took action in a big way when we started telling them about Get Your Refund CT to the tune of several million dollars. We're going to talk about that. About $500,000, I should say. We're going to be talking about that, and certainly here in the few weeks before we all start filing our taxes, we're going to give you a bunch of great information that you'll need to know from our friends at United Way of Connecticut about tax preparation. But first, we want to remind you that maybe one of the resolutions that you made is to eat healthier, and the Griffin Center for Healthy Living is going to help you resolve to eat healthier in 2025. They've got a free cooking demonstration on tap January 23rd, beginning at 5 o'clock at the Griffin Center for Healthy Living Teaching Kitchen at Quarry Walk in Oxford. This free culinary workshop is going to feature a discussion by a registered dietitian on the importance of including healthy grains in your diet. And then executive chef Darielle Murphy is going to prepare a high-fiber dish highlighting Frika for participants to learn how to make and sample. This event is free, but seating is limited and reservations are required. So to learn more and register, just go to griffinhealth.org/events-calendar, or just go to griffinhealth.org and search for the free cooking demonstration. All right. We're so pleased to welcome back to the program Amy Casavino-Hall. She's Senior VP for Strategic Partnerships, Development, and Communications at United Way of Connecticut. Amy, thanks for coming back.
Oh, so happy to be here. And thank you to you and your listeners for spreading the word around Get Your Refund.
Well, hopefully we are just one of a galaxy of media and outreach sources that helped reinforce that message. You know, you got to hear something 15, 20, 30 times before you take action. But it's a lot easier to jump into taking that action when there's money on the table. And here we are over $500,000 later in people's pockets, thanks to Get Your Refund CT. Let's take it back to the beginning, to those discussions that led up to the launch of this program.
Appreciate that. And, you know, it does make sense to go right back to that point, because, you know, we get data from the Internal Revenue Service that tells us that in Connecticut, about 20% of households aren't claiming really valuable tax benefits year after year. And that's like most states. Right? That's a really big number, though. But we didn't really have a sense of who are these households and what does that look like? So it was really great that with some partners, we were able to work together and with our Connecticut Department of Revenue Services and get a little more detail on that. And what we start to see is that households that weren't claiming things like the earned income tax credit, which is thousands of dollars for households that qualify, live in every part of our state, rural, urban, and suburban, that it was about 45,000 households, but also were really clustered in our largest cities and urban centers. But the other thing we found out is that most of these households, you know, they were earning about $19,000, $20,000 a year. Now, we're looking at households with children. $19,000, $20,000 a year is really, really, really hard to get by on in Connecticut. And that just moved us to action. That how do we understand? We know people want and need the money. How do we understand what's keeping people from filing? How can we support them in a way that feels useful and helpful to claim these benefits and get that money in their pocket? So we started working with partners all across Connecticut, Simplify CT down in Fairfield County, United Ways all across the state, funders like the Connecticut Project, and say, let's work together to do an outreach campaign to reach people, and let's set up new ways to support people, really putting people in the driver's seat to help people understand, hey, there may be money on the table for me, and there's easy ways for me, there's support for me every step of the way to try to get that money, and I don't have to kind of face the IRS on my own.
And in a number of these cases, my understanding is that these were people that, you know, have come to the age where they're beginning to file taxes. Maybe their tax filings are a little bit more complicated than just the simple, you know, one click on a website, send the W-2 and you're done. They've got children. They've got other various potential deductions or other liabilities. Maybe they even weren't filing their taxes just because they were so scared or intimidated by the process. And this program didn't only help to bring an education campaign about the amount of money, $120 million left on the table each year in unclaimed earned income tax credits, but for the tax year 2021, the ability to apply for those is going to expire this April 15th, 2025. So you brought in tax experts to kind of complete building the bridge for these taxpayers.
You said it perfectly.
Make it happen.
Right? Yeah. So it's hard to bring our heads back to 2021. But if you remember 2021, there were some like super benefits, right? Remember our stimulus payments? Mm-hmm. But also that year, there was that enhanced federal child tax credit. And it was worth a lot of money to families. So, you know, it went up to $3,600 per child if they're age or five or under, or $3,000 per child. You know, that's $1,000, $1,600 more than the standing credit. And you didn't have to have work income. So what we know about these credits, it can be a little counterintuitive, but, you know, the families that are struggling the most economically often get the least or nothing from these benefits, but not in 2021. And so your ability to claim those 2021 benefits, just as you said, John, ends this April 15th. So we want to do everything we can to help people who haven't gotten those benefits. And just like you mentioned, people aren't filing their taxes and getting their benefits. You know, a lot of reasons that you completely understand. People are afraid. What if I owe money? Is someone going to come after me because I haven't filed my taxes? Is it going to affect any other benefits I might get, right? You know, maybe I've got subsidized housing. I don't know if I file my taxes. Will that impact that? Or maybe my food stamps. So, you know, or my immigration status. There's a lot of things, a lot of fear keeping people from filing. And so we want to make sure everyone knows there may be real money sitting on the table for you and your family. And that we've got a system across the state that either virtually or in person, you can tap into a IRS certified tax specialist and walk you through the process every step of the way to get those taxes filed and get that money back.
So then, in fact, while the Get Your Refund CT outreach campaign was successful up to now in recouping almost $500,000 in unclaimed cash benefits for these 400 filers, it sounds like there's still potential for that $500,000 to escalate up to a much higher number if people really get the message and get to work engaging with one of your United Way of Connecticut partners and preparers before this April 15th.
we did this campaign in the fall where most of us weren't thinking about taxes, but it was an important window to try to capture people to think in advance of the tax season. But now it's tax season, and whether we like it or not, taxes are coming our way. And so if you or someone in your work or personal network, you know, may not be filing, you get a sense someone's not getting or not sure how to get their taxes done and what it means, let them connect them with support. Starting next week, people can go to 211ct.org, and the list of free certified tax preparers across the state will be up online and available. People can always call 211. And starting next week, we'll be helping people schedule for appointments to get their taxes done. When you meet with these tax filers at no charge, right? They're going to help you think about how to make sure you use this moment this tax season to also look back and get the best advantage of what might be available this tax season, and also look back. And if you missed any of these great kind of super benefits, make sure you're filed for them.
Right.
This is our window of time.
Yeah. And for folks that are listening to Amy, as we're recording this program, she's saying next week. But in fact, when this program plays on the air on January 12th at either 6 or 7 in the morning, depending on where you might be listening or you're checking out the podcast, you can pre-register for this free tax preparation starting tomorrow, Monday, January 13th. And it's as simple as just picking up a phone and calling 211, the InfoLine connection.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. You know, there are hundreds of millions of dollars left on the table every year, and we know it's money people really need. And we also know there's real barriers to people applying. So we're just always interested in hearing from people, and we did a lot of listening this year to think about what's keeping people away. And how we can put support in place to help people, you know, get what they're owed, right?
Yes.
This is money the IRS has said they owe you.
Mm-hmm.
It is sitting in an account, essentially kind of with your name on it, if you're owed money. And if you don't claim it by April 15th, so it's expired, you know, 2021, they're going to send it to some other account, right? So this isn't, you know, I think some people sometimes there's a tendency like, I don't want to tap into helper support, but this is money you're owed by the IRS, right? There should be no hesitation about making sure that your hard work is recognized and you get back what the government says is yours.
Right. How often do you get something back without putting in necessarily when it comes to the IRS? And speaking of which, you know, kudos to you and United Way Connecticut and your offices in 211 for helping to educate folks about other aspects of filing their taxes. There's some other things that we wanted to remind them about, right?
Absolutely. So just getting that message out that, you know, every year the network of organizations Connecticut provide free tax preparation services. Again, IRS-certified people using the latest software, and they'll meet with you, depending on location, in person. You can meet with someone virtually, and they will work with you to get your taxes filed, federal and state, at no charge. Thousands of households do this every year. It is an amazing benefit, and if you're thinking, this might be the year for me, absolutely encourage you to call 211 or go to 211ct.org and find a free tax prep provider, sometimes called a VITA provider or a VITA site near you. And there is something new this year that's really interesting. Something called Direct Files come into Connecticut. And federally, people use different software, different providers to do their taxes. But the IRS developed their own tax filing software that's totally free. And believe it or not, people love it. Love it. It got rave reviews when it was piloted last year. And Connecticut, I'm really proud of Commissioner Boughton and our Department of Revenue Services opted right in to be part of the next rollout. So starting this tax season, there's going to be a free software called Direct File through the IRS that people can use to file their taxes for free. There's income thresholds, but they're very generous income thresholds, right? Household income, I believe, up to $200,000. It's very, you know, there's all sorts of different things. But this is something that's meant to be widely available to people to file their state and federal taxes for absolutely free in a really high quality, safe way. So we want to make sure everyone knows about that.
Excellent. In the last couple of minutes that we have with you, Amy, what are yours and your office's resolutions? Any other new projects in the plan or readying for launch that you're able to share with us in the next couple of minutes?
Oh, what a great question. The 2025 legislative session just started up in Connecticut, and the United Way, all the United Ways across Connecticut, and with a coalition of 40 other organizations, we're working fast and furious this legislative session to get a state child tax credit passed. So we've been talking for the last few minutes about really tapping into federal benefits like the federal child tax credit and the earned income tax credit. But Connecticut is the only state in New England, and actually the only state in the country with its own state tax system that doesn't have some type of tax policy that helps offset for the really high costs of raising kids. And then we know in Connecticut, those costs are really high. So we've been pushing hard to get a child tax credit passed, and that's what we are totally focused on this legislative session, is seeing a benefit come to family, to households raising kids. We're asking for $600 per child to really help families offset those high costs. And if that helps you pay for childcare, great. If that helps you fix your car so you can get it back on the road to work, great. If that helps put food on the table, awesome. If that helps with some tutoring or to think about how we're going to pay for more education, all the merrier. Families make great decisions, but we know they need more resources to help them be successful. So that's what we're thinking about.
From everything from getting 400 Connecticut families to date, over $500,000 through Get Your Refund Connecticut, to advocating for Connecticut to be the last state in the country to have some sort of a child tax credit, Connecticut United Way is working hard to help put well-deserved funds in your pocket, along with all of the myriad other things that that organization does. 211 is a great place to start if you have questions about anything you may have heard in passing on the program. And we want to thank Amy Casavina Hall from the organization for filling us in on that this morning. Amy, best to you. Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you again.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All of mine shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call pound 250 and say keyword CARE. That's CARE to pound 250.